Hi, hello. We have a jam-packed episode of the Dunker Spot coming your way. First, we get into some summer league takeaways. We had some marquee matchups on Thursday. We talk about them. Also, if you want to check out some summer league games, download the Game Time app, get you some tickets, get in here, see some elite young talent as they grow into who they're going to be. But we talk summer league. We talk about a big 16 trade and what intrigues us. Other free agency news. We didn't shift to the W side. We talk about the surprise of Kennedy Carter waving. We get into the All-Star Reserves. We talk about some games that we're excited about over the weekend. We had a lot of fun on this episode. Tap in. Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of the Yahoo Sports Network. I am your host, Nikias Duncan. And joining me, as always, is my co-host, the always excellent Steve Jones Jr. Steve! Happy Friday. How are you, sir?
Feeling good, feeling great. Happy to be here. Excited to be here. Thank you, Dunkers, for once again embracing your bounce. Really excited to talk about a lot of basketball things with you, the big dog, Nikias Earl Grey Duncan.
Absolutely not. I'm not letting you get that one, though. But I'm also excited to talk some basketball with you. We had a lot to get to on today's episode, Steve. We've got summer league takeaways. We got a Kawhi Leonard update, a trade that happened that hasn't officially happened that may still happen. We'll get there. We got a big 16 trade to kind of cycle through with some previous transactions and some new faces to sprinkle in. But first, we start with summer league as we got a very fun battle between AJ DeBonta, Darren Peterson, the Utah Jazz, the Washington Wizards. We finally got the debut of AJ DeBonta. He finishes with 27 points, 7 rebounds, couple of assists, 2 steals, 1 block, had 19 points in the first half, lived at the line. And so I want to swing the rock to you, Steve, to get your observations. The one thing I want to sprinkle in first, as I am currently in Vegas, it was just an awesome atmosphere. Like, I love being in Vegas for Summer League and just to kind of get the congregation of media fans, just the general basketball sickos. You're seeing jerseys from players that played 20 years ago, 30 years ago, et cetera. It's just an awesome vibe on that front. And you could feel how big of a matchup this was with how quickly Thomas and Matt got packed out, the reactions to anything that Darren Peterson and AJ DeBonta did in particular. And so I will swing the rod to you. I want to hear what you saw, what stood out to you, but what an awesome atmosphere to be in. I didn't want to sprinkle that in first.
Well, I'm glad you were there. You know, obviously all the big dogs go to summer league on night one. So salute to you. It's a salute, big dog. I understand. But I mean, we start with summer league. I mean, Las Vegas, the basketball world turns there for a reason because of what it is. And, you know, the Thomas and Mack Center, the Cox Pavilion, the beauty and the pageantry of summer basketball. It's a thing. It's a real energy. The polos, everyone with some sort of notebook, people walking around trying to switch between arenas, getting seats early. It's a vibe, and I think it's important to kind of embrace that. And I know we're going to overreact and talk and enjoy, these guys playing in these high-profile matchups to start, but, like, take a second to soak in the charm of Summer League and take a second to realize these are the building blocks. These are talented players showcasing what they do, and we'll talk about some more players later, but these are returning players, roster players trying to showcase more of what they can do. And there's a whole lot of guys out there looking to get an opportunity anywhere. So it's a very unique and charming and fun competitive environment, and there's a reason why we enjoy it year after year. Now, I am very curious to get your thoughts on the matchup between the Jazz and the Wizards. And my first question to you when it comes to AJ DeBonta, how did you feel about the drives? Because there was a certain level of aggression that he displayed. There was a certain level of, on the drives, he was just gliding at times, looking for contact, trying to turn the corner. So how did you feel about what he displayed in that? Because I think part of the appeal of AJ DeBonta to the Wizards, especially with who they have on that roster, because they, like, you look at the Wizards roster and they got people, but I don't know what the Wizards are going to be, but they got folks. And now AJ DeBonta can be himself and grow without having to carry the load of a young team. So did he showcase kind of, oh, this could be really good on top of what the Wizards could present?
I think to answer the last part first, absolutely. I think that's an easy kind of building block to establish within what Washington is already looking to build and with the veteran talent that they've added over the past few months. I think it's going to be a fun fit for him. I think to the drives themselves, one, incredibly impressive, especially from like the second quarter onward. because it just felt like you could not keep him out of the paint at all. You had some wild finishes from him. He got to the free throw line quite a bit. I think the broader thing that stood out to me was like how quickly he adjusted, because early in that game, he was looking to be aggressive, but you saw a lot of like the mid-range bag for him. Those shots did not always go in. I remember I was tweeting out early in the first quarter, hey, some of these AJ shots, because it is drive, hit you, spin, pivot, let me take this contested shot over you, which he showed a level of comfort getting to those looks. It didn't feel like, oh, snap, I'm stuck. I got to throw up some nonsense. These were shots that he wanted to take. And so I'm just like, let's foul this away. This is some of the shot selection stuff that I was curious about. But interesting that he felt comfortable. And so for it to transition from that to, actually, Cody Williams, insert wing here, you just can't guard me. I am putting my head down and getting all the way into the teeth of the paint, getting to the rim. That's where it became fun. I was like, I love how quickly he pivoted to that point, because that skill was always going to be the winning one for him. And so if there is a situation where he now has to blend of both, mid-range shot making's going, the drives are there, he's getting to the free throw line, you get some playmaking off of the drives. He was really testing out the step back three in this game. That didn't really go down for him. But like, again, just showcasing what he's comfortable taking. I'm really fascinated about what kind of offensive player he can be. And I think the point that you made about him not having to carry a load once we get to like regular season Wizards basketball, it should make it easier for the drives in particular to pop. But very impressed with how relentless he was.
I thought there was a composure on the drives, especially in pick and roll. Like, there's just, okay, we're going this way. I'm going to turn the corner. We're going to see what happens. And I think there's a confidence displayed in looking to get to some of those mid-range looks. You may not like all of them, but being willing and able to kind of get to your spots and try and get to counters, I feel like is important. So I was impressed with just the evolution and just the poise that he had. You know, did it ever feel to you like he was overly sped up at times?
Like very early in the first quarter, it was like, hey, let's calm this down a little bit. But for the most part, the answer was no for me. And I think it speaks to your poise point. And it was also fascinating to me within that Utah wasn't afraid to say, hey, we're going to have a big at the level. Let's try to cut off some of these drives, if you don't mind. And it was fascinating seeing him kind of process that in real time. Like, okay, am I going to try to string this along and then pass it? Am I going to just try to beat this with a drive, which I think he did once or twice in that game as well? But yeah, like I think he's ultimately going to be fine. So I'm not super concerned.
It's the strides for me. Like they went to like double drag or high pick and roll for him, and it's like, okay, he's taking one or two dribbles and wait, he's already at the elbow. And, okay, that's something you got to deal with. That's a little bit different. So it was fun to see that. Another Wizard point before we get to Darren Peterson. Trey Johnson very much was playing like I would like to be sitting across from our team next year. I don't really think I need to do this much longer. So I wanted to give him a quick salute. Summer League, if you're a bucket getter, it's your time to shine. To the Darren Peterson part of it, right? I think it's probably easy to circle 9 fouls, which I just thought was funny when he answered, like, hey, they told me I had 10. So, you know, let's go.
Might as well. It. Can't take a widget.
8 turnovers. The dynamic is interesting because this was AJ DeBonce's debut. This was Darren Peterson's third Summer League game, technically. He played 2 in Utah. And so we have seen the ups and downs, the highs and lows to a degree of Darren Peterson. We saw growth. And now it's a different environment. Mm-hmm. Obviously, a high-profile matchup. Did you feel anything was different for Darren Peterson in this matchup? Did you have any concerns based on what we saw? Because game 1, pretty good, mixed bag. Game 2, electric, as far as being able to get to a spot to turn the corner and also play make. And then you have this matchup where, okay, playmaking is down a little bit, aggression's up a little bit, turnovers are up. Did that shift anything for you? Because I think it's always fun to kind of, you have people who are playing their first game, you have people who have done this, so how do you kind of digest that?
No, I think that's a good question. I think for Darren, I don't think anything shifted completely for me when it comes to him. I think it was fascinating. I think I tweeted about this too, like, AJ, you're getting 2 on the ball. How are you dealing with this? With Darren Peterson, it was a very consistent dose of high ball pressure. We talked about the Darren Peterson fouls. Hey, Jameer Watkins almost fouled out of that game too. We talked about him a little bit towards the end of the season, some of the defense he displayed in Washington as they were losing a lot of games, but still competitive overall. I had a lot of fun with Darren Peterson versus Jameer Watkins. And that includes the early pickup points, the off-ball physicality, et cetera. And then you get the moment midway through the first quarter where Darren Peterson hits them with a snatchback and Jameer Watkins nearly stumbles over. It's like, oh, well, that seems a little bit problematic. I don't know if that's what you want to do. But I think that battle was fun. And I think in general, with Darren dealing with that amount of high pressure, him getting some two on the ball, him getting face guarded off the ball, like he just had to deal with a lot of pressure. And so a little bit of a mixed bag. You mentioned the turnovers. I don't think all of that was just the pressure and being bad at dealing with it or anything like that. Some of this was a little bit of audaciousness. Some of this was driving in traffic. And so, like, for me, it was like, I'm glad that I have this data point. Like, now I want to see if teams try to carry that over when we get to, like, preseason play. Is that going to be some of the early bit on the scouting report for Darren Peterson? Because something that he talked about after the game was, you know, having fun, first and foremost, but also I'm more on the ball than off the ball. And so one of the things that popped in those two Salt Lake City games for me was, like, obviously he had the three-level scoring, could get to the pull-up, could get to the floaters, could get to the rim, the drives really hit, et cetera. But, like, he gets a ball screen. He's already so good at, like, snaking and probing and having someone on his back and keeping them there and that kind of thing. And, like, watching him navigate pressure behind half court, I'm going to get off the ball, try to come back off with a handoff. I got to deal with that physicality. Then when I get the ball, I'm still trying to keep someone behind me. And then I'm also just seeing bodies in front of me and swipes at the nail and things like that. It's like, okay. This was not perfect, hence the turnovers, hence the shot efficiency. But this is a good data point. Now I want to see, I don't know if he plays again this weekend, since you mentioned this is his third game. But if he does play again this weekend, how does he build off of that? What does it look like the next time we see him? And as we get into preseason and regular season play, if that becomes more of the boat, how quickly can he take that off the table? Or will that just be a consistent theme for his rookie season at least? That we're going to hit you with pressure, we're not going to let you get caught.
No, I think it was interesting because the Wizards have a little bit more size in different areas of the court. They were able to switch a little bit more. And I think, like, every young guard, for the most part, in the summer is going to be – there's going to be a little bit of predetermining your reads or your passes or your thoughts. And so I didn't necessarily feel like that was the entire bit, but it did feel like, okay, let me see what y'all are doing, and then let me see what I can do after that. And so they were showing help. Mm-hmm. After a switch. And so, okay, let me diagnose this. Let me pass. Let me get off the ball. But I think the blend of what Utah can do helps. And so this is a building block as far as looking at Darren Peterson, the player, and understanding, okay, the ceiling's pretty high. He can do a whole lot of things. The context of having more people around him where it's not just, okay, Darren Peterson, do stuff, that is where it gets fun for me. So I didn't necessarily dock him for this one. It was just more like, okay, I know the vibes we're looking for in this one. Maybe it didn't hit every note, but I think we once again are reminded this is a very talented player who can help elevate this Utah Jazz team. I think that's the fun part. So that was good as far as what he did. I think he's a lot of the questions or concerns people had about him, I think those have all been erased through three summer league games. I think we can knock some of those to the side, right?
It would imagine that having, like, functional legs allows you to get into the paint more and thus more drives, more playmaking. And we already know he can shoot. It is a novel concept, but he just seems healthier. And him being healthier means he can now showcase even more of what is in his bag. So,
I'm right there with you. Yeah, very good. Now, I wanted to come here. Oh, go ahead. You have another question? I was going to pivot.
What do you got? I just wanted to quickly say on the Wizards front before we officially move. Well, I guess one note each. One, Will Riley, a lot of big plays down the stretch for Washington. Another guy that certainly took on a lot of on-ball usage towards the end of the season for Washington. Fun game for him. A lot more initiation than I thought. He brought the ball up a lot in this game. And then Cody Williams continues to look solid. And so those are the two quick notes I want to sprinkle in before we transit.
Okay. I see what you're doing there. I wanted to get your thoughts on the Kings-Clippers matchup. The Darius Acuff Jr. Keaton Wogler Bowl. You were in the building for that. Shout out to the Swell. Mm-hmm. What did you absorb from that matchup of bucket getters who didn't always get buckets in this one? How did you get there? What do you feel about?
Oh, man. This was a fascinating basketball game. And so, like, we've talked about Darius Acuff Jr. a little bit before. This is my first time getting to see him in person. And this is also just my first time getting to see Keaton Wagler. So I'm like, okay, marquee lottery point guard matchup. This should be a lot of fun. It became clear very early on that the Kings were not going to allow Keaton Wagler to have a lot of fun in this basketball game. And so just
Hold on. Let's stay right there. I'm glad. Okay. This is why I set you up. I'm glad you said that because I was watching that game and I saw the first pick and roll and I saw two people up there from Sacramento playing defense and I was like, this is not what I signed up for. I thought we were getting bucket getting. No, you're going to have to go immediately get thrown into the fire of, yeah, we're putting two on the ball, buddy. Two people are here. What are you going to do? And I felt like that disrupted his entire rhythm because it's like it's one thing for you to do what you do and then earn more attention or coverages. But right out of the gate, nah, man, not you in summer league is pretty rude, right? Mm-hmm. Like if we could a short list of things you could do rudely in summer league to start, zone, traps. Those are the top two for me. Because full court pressure, like if you don't have the guys, like you'll get beat and you'll stop doing it. But like you start putting two on the ball or getting to the level, like what's our counters really? We haven't really been practicing like
we just all know.
So that's where I was like, that's intriguing. But continue on with your thoughts on Keaton.
Oh, yeah. So it's just like, okay, they're not going to let him have a good time. So as you mentioned, they're tossing two on the ball against him. And like to his credit, I think it was only a one turnover game for him. And so he largely handled it well. I think he made the right passing decisions. One of the first things I jot down in my notes in a very Nikias fashion. It's like, okay, so he's hitting the roller when he's getting two on the ball. I don't love the velocity on these passes. It's a little too much loft for me. Like you're not really giving your roller a chance to like take advantage of the numbers game if you were pretty much tossing moon balls to get it up. And I think that did get better as the game went on. But I was like, okay, let's see how he handles this. But I do think with the mix of at the level slash trapping that he saw, and then even with the more traditional stuff, I think the ball pressure bothered him a little bit. He wasn't able to consistently create separation. And it was fascinating to kind of see that from the broader lens of what the Kings were trying to do defensively. I thought they were just pretty active all night long. And then monitoring what the counters were going to be from the Clippers. And so you saw Keaton Wagler kind of sliding down to the two with another ball handler. Let's get you off ball to start possession so you're not dealing with the full court pressure at the very least. Let's see if we can run you off of some flares. Can we get you off some UCLA? Can we get you off some pin downs to get you some catches on the move? And that helped a little bit, but those results were a little bit inconsistent. And so it's like it was a lot quieter of a debut for Keaton than I was anticipating. I guess since we're kind of hanging there and starting there. I don't know how actually concerned I am. Like this is one of those, like, I don't love how this started, but let's see. Three games, five games, let's get to the regular season. Because I think similar to the Darren Peterson portion, if you say he's going to be playing a lot of his minutes alongside Darius Garland, how much is that going to matter if it is an issue? To where naturally Darius is a really good playmaker. He might get some two on the ball. And now it's Keaton attacking tilted defenses. Like, does that just unlock everything else? I think he is a really good playmaker. I think there is some inside the arc comfort in terms of maneuvering the middle of the floor and making reads from there. But the Kings largely didn't let him get to it. Like, I think there was schematic stuff. There was that pressure. Emmanuel Sharpe came off the bench and just wreaked havoc that entire basketball game. Like, that was something that I was not anticipating as someone that likes to come into summer league and get fresh looks at these guys, right? So, like, I wasn't aware of who Emmanuel Sharpe was to that degree. Defense popped like crazy. But those were some of the early Kings thoughts for me, or some of the early Keaton thoughts for me.
I'm going to let that get fresh looks line live. We'll circle back to that at a later date. I think the biggest thing is, does Keaton Wagler bookmark the physicality that he dealt with? Does he bookmark the pressure? Mm-hmm. And so this is where I think it's easy to just point to a stat line and be like, well, if our team, how our rookie guy did this and people would yell, don't do that. Take this as a bookmark. League,
stop it.
See what he does in the next time that he plays and see how this goes going forward. So, okay, if you have concerns about separation, you have concerns about physicality and pressure, okay, what's his adjustment? Let's see what that looks like the next time he plays. What's the aggression look like? That's the fun of watching. Take note of little things and see if it improves, see if it gets better, and see what type of shots he looks to take, see what type of counters he looks to display. I think a lot of the comfort we have, especially with some of these scoring guards, is a deep rookie class. Okay, they have the ability to kind of figure things out maybe quicker than people expect. So what do they try to? What is their next move? I think is going to be interesting. So I think it was just a learning moment for Keaton in this first one. As far as, okay, this is what you may have to encounter. This is what we think you can't do. What are you prepared to do about it? So I'm more intrigued to see the next game rather than to say, oh, he's not X, Y, and Z based off the first game. Like, that's just where my brain goes in that. Did you have any Darius Acuff Jr. thoughts?
This felt like one of the more well-rounded performances that he's had. Now, obviously, this is a small sample of, what, three games this summer, so don't want to index too much. But I was pretty impressed. Did not make shots at a high clip, and he talked about that post-game, in the post-game interviews. Like, hey, I got to be better. I got to make more shots. Got to get my teammates more involved. But what continues to pop for me is just the confidence that he plays with. Like, he moves around, as simple as it may sound, he just moves around the court like he deserves to be there. And can just kind of get to his spots when he wants to get to them. And then you get into some of the mid-range counters. Did I love, you know, similar to AJ Devonta, did I love every shot that he took last night? I did not. Was I impressed with the comfort in some of the shots and some of the counters that he got to in the middle of the floor? I was. Because clearly, if you look that comfortable taking some of these looks, you have worked on those. You have taken those in the past. And so I think it's important to kind of showcase, if you do pressure me, if you do hit me with some at the level stuff, one, I can make the playmaking reads off of that. That's a big deal. But beyond that, I don't really care if you're showing this kind of nail help. All I need is a sliver of space to get to a look that I'm comfortable taking. And then from there, it is just, okay, decision making. Do I need to take this one? That's where the experience is going to come in. Similar to all these rookies that we're talking about, when you are playing alongside more NBA talent, you may not be tasked with taking the same types of shots. You may not see the same types of defenses. The context should be easier for you. But for me, like, the counters that he displayed in the middle of the floor, the transition stuff was a lot of fun for me. The passing was really good in this basketball game, especially once he started seeing two on the ball. You got him getting a few ice coverage reps on top of that. They mixed coverages against him. I thought he diagnosed those pretty well. And defensively, the on-ball defense felt better. Like, he was occasionally a part of the full quarter, like three-quarter courts pressure package from Sacramento. Had some nice reps against Keaton Wagler as well. I will say, and I wrote about this in my takeaways piece, the controller just kind of dies once he stops guarding on the ball. I don't love that. Like, Summer League is a place to kind of start building up those habits. Like, Keaton Wagler's one make of the game was Darius Acuff defending a pick and roll, getting clipped on the screen but recovering. And then the ball is swung and he just turns around and starts walking. And Keaton Wagler's like, well, let me just relocate the other way then. And he gets a wide open three as Darius Acuff is like, oh, that's my man. So it's just like, let's limit those as often as we can, if you mind. But overall, it was a very good game for me. Like, the box score says what it says, please. But like, I was pretty impressed with the cover. What I, well, I can't talk about.
No, because you have this thing with like pauses that basketball players take while playing basketball that drives you crazy. And it's like, I understand. Yeah, I'm taking a beat, man. I did four tween heads and the ball's been swung. I'm going to breathe for a second. I wanted to swing to the Mavericks and the Warriors because
yes,
Merez Johnson was one of my favorite picks when we talked about the draft. And watching him play, it's fun. Like, early on, I was just like, okay, I enjoy watching him play defense. Like, there are, like, he's going to need some reps, but there's a bounciness to him that exists as far as I can cover space. I will help. I will recover. He'll get the positioning down. So it's not a perfect world, but it's like, there's a lot you can kind of you can mold that into defensively. And offensively, it just kind of grew as the game went on.
Yeah,
he didn't stop. Okay. Hey, okay. So you're real quick at making the next decision. You get the ball. Let's get to another dribble handoff, pick and roll. Let me get it going. Okay, I got some mid-range touch. And then that just turned into, oh, yeah, I can just drive. And he just kept driving. And I was like, oh, there's things here. And so maybe it's because Colin Murray-Boyles had the season he had last year. But I'm very intrigued with, okay, what do we do with this type of athletic, I'm not going to say demon because everyone says demon, but this kind of athletic player that can just kind of do a lot of things and play with a lot of energy. How did you absorb that?
No, I thought it was a lot of fun. I think what popped on film for me was just the general level of juice that he played with. So I'm glad that you kind of started there. His motor runs so incredibly hot. Aside from the Dallas Mavericks hiring Dusty May, it's very easy to see why they loved Merez Johnson coming out. Because like at a very baseline level, not only am I going to guard multiple positions, I'm going to fly around off the ball, And like, you're going to feel me. Like, this isn't me gambling for off ball steals. Like, no, you try to drive against me, you will have to do some work to get into the paint. You try to shoot over me, I am challenging your shot. I can grab, kick it out to someone, now I'm running the floor. You got to deal with these seals. You got to deal with random screens and kind of flowing from there. And then, as you mentioned, you got to deal with some of these drives, and I will hit you too. And so, like, just adding that kind of juice, that kind of activity, that kind of physicality is a lot of fun for me. And, like, some of the mid-range touch I'm intrigued by, like some of these push shots, some of these floaters, in addition to the drives, like, that's a lot of fun for me. So I'm just kind of excited to see Cooper Flagg was in the building watching that game, naturally. I want to see him and Cooper Flagg on the floor together, because that is a lot of skilled size. That is a lot of defensive upside between those two. And so depending on how the Mavericks round out their lineups and different combinations they get to, like, those two playing together, Morez, you take the on-ball stuff. Cooper Flagg gets to fly off-ball. Cooper Flagg, you defend on-ball as he took on some tough assignments last year. Morez Johnson, you get to fly around. You have the combined rebounding from those two as well to get you out in transition. Like, I'm kind of in already. So I'm glad you went with the Morez Johnson shout. And just broader strokes, and I'll toss it back to you. It's very fun that this happened in this particular game where you had Yaxel on the other side of this, who has also been very impressive in summer league.
That was where I was going. Where are you at with Yaxel as far as, because he has a lot of the elements that you enjoy in a basketball player. Do you have height? Can you shoot? Can you dribble? Can you defend? So I'm just kind of taking a temperature check of where are you at with Yaxel? Because I feel like you've been hiding it a little bit. You've been shuffling it to the back. I'm waiting for the full Nekias Duncan endorsement. Where are we at?
Hey, listen, I sprinkled it in, I think, on the last episode. Like, hey, he had a big game. I'm not sure where the three-point shooting is going to land, but everything else I'm in on. We put together another fantastic game, and it's like, hey, he's still shooting. And then you have the drives, particularly in transition. You have the playmaking, very quick processor on the floor. And then defensively, I will fly around all over the place. I will guard who you want me to guard. Like, he is such a fun chess piece on both ends of the floor for this Golden State context. You're seeing that in summer league right now. When he gets to play alongside Steph, what is that going to look like? If he's the guy that is like doing the post-split stuff, whether he is just in the post and making the passing decisions, he's going to be good enough to do that. If it's Draymond in that post position, and now he's setting the off-ball screen for Steph, you try to navigate, you try to switch. Now he's diving to the basket. Oh my goodness. He may dunk on your head. He may finish in the middle of the floor. He may keep things moving as a passer on top of that. Yeah, I like this pick. I like the fit. I have liked what I've seen so far this summer from Yaxel.
All right, the stamp is there. And because the stamp is there, it's a perfect time for me to pivot to the Summer League Charlotte Hornets. And there's a theme here, so stick with me here.
Okay.
The Hornets are interesting, right? Because they start Liam McNeely, Tijon Salon, Ryan Kalkbrenner, Sion James, Christian Anderson. You got a lot of roster people there, which should allow some level of continuity or flow, but also does that potentially restrict what you're getting out of them? Because part of like the theme that I'm going for here with the returning players, or the roster players, is there's an opportunity for exploration, experimentation. We could do different things. You could be put in different environments. When you have a lot of them together, you do kind of end up having the advantage of, we play like this, so we know what we're looking for. And so you saw at times they were just kind of just going and just playing, which a lot of teams like, okay, where are we running? Dribble handoff to pick and roll. Didn't work. You're denied. Can I please get a ball screen? Like, that's just, it's summer league. We know it's
summer league. Yeah.
But the Hornets were kind of able to play and hum, but then it stops. And they're not going to play like the entire summer league together, I would imagine. So how do you absorb kind of watching these proven products to a degree, maybe settle into who they are a little bit? Because, like, you had T.J. Salon took four shots. Liam McNeely stocks, by the way, you might want to purchase.
Hey, listen.
That's just something I'm saying. No headband, and he's getting buckets. But when you look at a team like that, how do you kind of soak that in as far as evaluating them?
I think for the rookies, is like, how quickly can you slot into that, or can you stand out without taking over the offense? And that's where, like, the Christian Anderson piece was interesting to me. Because you did see him kind of get it up, but it didn't feel like an A-cuff game. I'm not saying that disrespectfully, but it's like, this is kind of my show. We go as I go. This is about me getting me comfortable. And so it didn't feel like that a ton for Christian Anderson, for example. And then for the returners, it's like there should be a baseline level of comfort since you've been in the system already. Is there going to be a heightened level of aggression? I think that's where it certainly helps that Liam McNeely, UConn heritage, it certainly helps that he shot the leather off the darn ball in this basketball game. But in general, like, are you looking for more? And tied to that, how are you looking for more? Is it going to be more drives? Is it more mid-range shot making? Is it just the three-point shot making? And so, like, those are kind of the process things that I'm trying to navigate. Like, with Tijon Salon, I think part of him looking more solid in his minutes last year was, I know where I'm supposed to be on the court, as simple as that sounds. And so it wasn't always going to be, I took six threes in this game, even if the calling card for him offensively was going to be the shooting. Sometimes it is just, I have proper spacing. I know when to cut from the slot. I can screen for you and get you going. And I kind of get in where I fit in. And so I would have liked to see more aggression from him in this game, but he didn't feel out of place. And I think considering where he was as a rookie, what we've seen prior, just continuing to build on that general spatial awareness was pretty important.
No, I get it. And I think it's a unique circumstance, and it's a positive from the coaching perspective, because we can just kind of get everyone in one place at one time and continue to build our habits. Just as far as from the pure player, you are asked to do this, you do miss out on some of that. So I was intrigued to get your opinion. You said UConn heritage, and the first thing that popped in my brain was Terrence Reed Jr., because I know he only had four offensive rebounds, and I know three of those came, I think, in the first quarter, but that's a big guy. And that's a big guy in San Antonio next to another big guy. So I'm intrigued. I don't know how much, like, how do you feel about what he can contribute? Because I had a lot of fun just watching him be tall.
No, like, if you watched him at UConn, and particularly in the tournament, it turned into a lot more like, hey, can you please save us with some of these post-ups? Because you're so much stronger than other front court players that you're facing. So, like, it was kind of fun, but it was also like, I don't like how much they need for this to kind of juice their offense. So seeing him in the summer league context where it's more screen, dive, finish, get nasty on the offensive glass, we don't need you to carry the offense, it felt more free, even if the role itself feels a little bit more limiting in a sense. But yeah, he's just going to be massive for San Antonio, figuratively and literally. Like, I'm already kind of envisioning him in some second units with just the general size that San Antonio can toss out with some of their lineups now. That should be a lot of fun. That should be another way for them to kind of swing more of the possession battle in their favor. And you already have Victor Wembanyama, who's just going to take away the rim from teams when he's on the floor. And so now you go to Terrence Reed. And it's like, oh yeah, I'm going to hit you. We hit people. We hurt people. We hurt people. We hurt people. I'm kind of in on the Terrence Reed experience.
Okay.
We're getting all the goodies out today.
We hurt people. I understand. Interesting performance. Carter Bryant, it's hard to digest to a degree because I think there is opportunity to do more. But what he does well earned him rotation minutes. And, like, you can add to that and showcase different things in the summer league, but also your natural instinct is not conducive to doing that to a degree. So like, he was aggressive, but it was also like, no, I'm just going to play basketball. And it's like, well, hey man, you should probably like drive.
This is, you can take more of that.
Yeah. Just kind of your platform. I do want to give a quick salute to Kingston Flemings. Once again, lightning quick, but it said, I'm here to defend and I'm here to be a point guard. So I'm going to switch a whole bunch. I don't really care. I'm going to nail all that. And then if I drive or am in pick and roll and there's help, getting off the ball. Done my job. I respect it.
Very professional point guard play.
There's rarely a forced effort from Kingston Flemings. He is just, I don't know if he just watches Chris Paul highlights before the game, but it's just like, nope, here to do my job. Getting out of here. Yep, we're good. So salute to him. I wanted to bring that up.
Tell you what, it's a good guy to watch if that's the case.
I didn't hear you say that, by the way. I heard you say that, but I didn't. Okay, you know what, another returning player wanted to hit on Minnesota.
I was waiting for you to get to Minnesota. I've seen some clips. I've seen some tweets from you. I didn't get to watch that game, so I am fascinated.
Well, to hear your take. He's got a lot of juice, and I enjoy watching him play the game of basketball. I think he'll just be really good for them as a backup five with more minutes behind Rudy Gobert, in theory. I joked with Minnesota fans, hey, sell me on him at the four. They did not get the joke. and told me it's impossible. So salute to y'all for reading that. But I was fine with that. Also, very quickly, I was doing some scrolling. Apparently, there were people that were upset that Jeremiah Fears and Derek Queen did not make appearances in Summer League. And I watched 35 seconds of that game, and they made the right decision. They don't need to be there. It's Friday. We're on a Friday. You get a text right now. You go, I don't need to be there. You're going to say, no, I'm not going.
It's Friday. It's certainly a lot hotter than 95 degrees in Vegas.
Oh,
I'm leaving it. I've got nothing else. Which, quick shout, that's something I should have mentioned during the Kings Clippers portion of the program. One, quick shout to John DeMobo. What a game he had. A lot of energy. Former Raptor. Scotty Barnes was sitting courtside, and you would have thought he was a member of the Sacramento Kings. Anytime John DeMobo did anything in that basketball game, he is standing up and yelling. It was a blast. And then during that game, in walks Brandon Ingram and Glorilla. And watching the crowd react to
Did you yell, Glow? I did not.
Where I was sitting, that would have been very obvious. I don't want to be known as the media guy that yelled, yeah, Glow, during a stoppage. I couldn't do that. But it was cool to see Scotty Barnes, Brandon Ingram dap up, talk it up, chop it up, all that good stuff. And again, the fan reaction to seeing Glorilla, more than anything, it was just funny to watch. It's a very natural response, like, oh my God, that's Glow. It was just funny to me. So that just jogged the memory. I just want to sprinkle that in. My apologies.
Keep running circles around these. Anyways, what you got?
Oh, Lord. I want to ask you about another game that I haven't gotten to sink my teeth into yet. And I know you've gotten at least a good bit of it. How did you soak in Sixers Pistons? Because those were two guards that you were pretty enamored with where they landed. And we talked about it on the post draft show.
With a smile on my face. That's what y'all wanted from the Kings Clippers game, you would have gotten from the Sixers Pistons. I'm just letting you know right now. Well, everything you thought you was getting then, you got earlier in the day. And like LeBaron Finelon came out early, and I was like, I always like to watch guards, young guards in Summer League pick and roll. Like, what's your thought process here? I'm not grading you on a hard curve, but like, what do you think? And so he saw the big bat, took a step back three, and I was like, oh, okay, all right, that's good. Next time down, we turn the corner, engage the space, get two, hit the pop. I was like, oh, okay, I see what you're doing here. I'm picking up what you're putting down. So you're a bucket getter, but also, okay, you're thinking a little bit. Now, the third time, it was like, let me try and snake crossover. Ball went like to the left, and that just happens. These things happen. Yeah. But I like the energy execution in the attack. I like the pick because he fits in what they want to do. And I think he has the right aggression without being overly aggressive, which I think is important in the Sixers context. Like, you need to be able to go get buckets, but you also got to know when to not. And so driving kick is going to be key for them. I think he fits in. Okorie for the Pistons, brother can drive smooth handle. It's after. Okay. And so like, the thing I liked about him is that he fits into what Detroit likes in the sense that go get one, right? And it's not apples to orange, like it's not apples to apples with Danish Jenkins, but it's like, do you have that dog mentality in you? Are you willing to go get a bucket? Can you go get one? Let's get after it. And so like they had Marcus Sasser, who had a lot of that in him as well. So this is not a new thing for them as far as an archetype goes, but like I just think he's gonna fit in well with what they want to do. The Pistons got a weird offseason where I feel like maybe because people expected a big swing, they feel odd about it, but it's like, no, I think they've kind of doubled down on what they want to do in a different way. Mm-hmm. And so I think he's a big piece of that.
No, I think that's fair. Like, I think he should slot in nicely into that guard room. And if it looks like this in Summer League, again, I've seen like the highlights of the Okorie performance. I want to watch the full game so I get a full sense of like what actually happened. So I don't want to speak out of turn. But hey, man, if he's good and NBA ready now, like I would like to see some minutes with him alongside Cade, let them play off of each other, let them attack tilted defenses. Like that could be a lot of fun.
How does one speak out of turn on a podcast?
there's a way I could answer that question. I'm not going to do that in the interest of I would just kindly say very easily in some cases. Very easily in some cases. But I do not want to do that. And so,
oh my. We need a break.
Well, we're going to let's pivot. We're recording on a Friday morning, so by the time this drops, I bet just some of the early Friday games we'll be playing. But Steve, any matchups in particular that excite you heading into the weekend?
All of them. That's you fair. Knew better than to ask me that question. What's standing out to you?
Well, okay. So the marquee matchup for Friday, at the very least, we get Bulls Grizzlies. More Cam Boozer. We get Caleb Wilson. We get Daylen Swain. That should just be a lot of fun. Portland Phoenix is one that I am intrigued by, just by with some of the returning names on both of these rosters. Like, what is Rashear Fleming going to look like? What is Kaban Duwadawach going to look like? Is he going? How aggressive is he going to be? Year two of Young Hansen. Does he look more comfortable offensively? Do we see more of the passes popping? So, like, there's some stuff in the late slate on Friday. On Sunday, I guess my wild cards, like Kings, Wizards, Clippers, Jazz, sound fun. I'm also worried that one or both of like the major parties there are going to be shut down by the time we get to Sunday. So I don't know how to feel about that matchup. It should be very good. Spurs, Bucks. Just so I can get a look at the Bucks rookies. And also, like, hey, Terrence Reed, let's see what you got, et cetera. And then Charlotte, Golden State on Sunday. Sign me up. If Yaxel plays, that should be a lot of fun. If nothing else, we should get another game with Christian Anderson. So those are some off the cuff. Have some fun.
The full Nekias Duncan special. Ask me a question that he was asking himself. And then
I wasn't asking
ignored the Milwaukee Miami matchup that happens today. Well done.
I said by the time we that's why I started with by the time we drop out, we're gonna miss some of the early slate. That is, I want to be in the building for that one, actually. But by the time the pod dropped, that game's probably gonna be over with. Or advance is gonna be like the third quarter or something. So I didn't want to, you know, spill ink.
Sure won't.
You got it. Any other summer league shout outs or anything that you want to get to before we transition?
No.
Okay.
No.
Fair enough. All right, well, while we're still on the NBA side, let's get into some news items. At the top of the list, Kawhi Leonard was traded back to the Toronto Raptors. The NBA, in short, was like, hey, Toronto, just want to let you know, y'all can still do this, but the aspiration investigation is not over yet. And thus, if we do find anything related to Kawhi and we have to suspend him or void the contract in the most extreme case, et cetera, y'all are going to be on the hook for that. And the Raptors, as most sensible organizations would when being presented with that information, was like, you know what? Let's wait until the investigation is done before we officially push this through. And so the Clippers released a statement. The Raptors released a statement. The Clippers maintaining their innocence. They feel like the trade is going to go through. The Raptors like, we are excited to add Kawhi, but we are going to wait until it is officially safe to add Kawhi. And so, Steve, two-part question for you. Like, question and a free throw. One, do you expect this to get done in short order? And two, what happens first? We get the Kawhi decision as we are 10 plus months into this, or we get the LeBron decision?
Sure, Kawhi.
That is just fair enough. I think Michael Grange did say that some of the early rumblings, they hope to have a decision by Tuesday, the Board of Governors meeting that's happened on Tuesday. So we will see if that is the case. We've already analyzed the actual trade, so it'd be kind of fun to be like, well, Brandon Ingram's back in Toronto. What is year two of this going to look like? So we will see what happens, as we have been waiting to see what happens for over 10 months at this point. But okay, we'll keep an eye on it. We also had, as we move to actual transactions, Steve, some things that we've talked about before, but as we see more now in today's NBA lineup, the aprons and everything else, hey, what if all of us just rope our transactions into one big transaction? So we can move some second-round picks around, move some money around, create some trade exceptions, et cetera. And so we got a six-teamer announced over this past week, Steve, where the Mavs are getting Santi Aldama, who we discussed, Marcus Sasser, the rights to Tariq Maverovich. The Pistons got John Collins in a sign-in trade now from the Los Angeles Clippers. Gary Harris and Torian Prince are also going to the Detroit Pistons in exchange for Caris LeVert. They're getting some second-round picks on top of this. Isaiah Stewart, as was announced during draft time, he's going to the Memphis Grizzlies. D'Angelo Russell, no longer a Washington Wizard, now a Memphis Grizzly. We'll see for how long. A.J. Johnson's also in Memphis. LeVert in Milwaukee, as I mentioned. Chris Middleton back to Washington on a sign-in trade. 3 years, $17.6 million. And the Clippers generating a trade exception and also getting a second-round pick in the John Collins sign-in trade. So among the six teams, among these players, what is the most interesting thing about this deal for you?
Probably Detroit doubling down, getting Gary Harris, Torian Prince, and their ability to shoot in space and giving them some lineup versatility as far as, okay, we can have more people who do this one specific thing that we have not done well enough. And so, you know, if one person doesn't have it, we can do another attempt at, hey, you can defend and also maybe space floor, and if you can't, we'll go somewhere else. So I think I like that the most. Dallas, I will hand that to you. Okay. Because I think you like Dallas and Memphis. The Caris LeVert portion is interesting in Milwaukee because the context. I'm also handing Washington to you because that's Chris Middleton. So, yeah, Detroit for me.
Okay.
I do like the idea of Dallas getting Marcus Sasser and Santi Aldama. Mm-hmm. Like, I think Marcus Sasser should have enough wiggle room in that context to produce at a higher level. Like, I think there's an easier track for him to just kind of be more consistent. I think with Detroit, it went from, we really appreciate what you do, to, hey, can you do this very specific thing? Because we need this very specific thing. And they found people that could do that very specific thing. And it's like, we still need you, but also, like,
yeah,
just stay ready. Cool. And so I think that will shift for him in Dallas.
Okay. I like that. I think for me, I guess to start with the Wizards portion, we're just keeping up the Southeast propaganda. I am very surprised this is how it ended, considering how much smoke was around the Heat landed Giannis. Giannis loves Chris Middleton. Chris Middleton is a free agent. Surely Chris Middleton is just going to be a member of the Miami Heat. And this turns into not only a sign and trade back to Washington, it's a 3-year deal. Now, we've got to see like what the year 2-year, 3 guarantees are, et cetera. But I'm just like, huh, this is kind of, that's crazy. But I was like, huh, this is kind of fascinating. And so, as you alluded to during the summer league portion of the conversation, the Wizards do just have a lot of vet talent in the room. And obviously, this is not 33 minutes a game, all-star Chris Middleton. Like, this is very much low to mid 20 minutes, knock down some threes, occasionally play make, and then we can sit you down for our younger guys they want to develop. Like, we know what it is at this station. But Trae Young, Anthony Davis, you add Chris Middleton back into the mix, you are at least providing some level of infrastructure to where, as you mentioned, the young guys do not have to do literally everything. Like, we have Trae to be our primary ball handler, initiator, pick and roll creator. And so our young guys could play more off of tilted defenses. Anthony Davis alongside Anthony Sarr, like, neither one of them wants to be a five, but like, okay, we can split duties here at the very least. And it would, depending on what level of attention they draw offensively, like, okay, A.J. Devonta, your drives can hit in a different way. Trae Johnson, you can just kind of play off of the Trae Young, Anthony Davis gravity whenever y'all share the floor together. So, like, all that's kind of fascinating. I think Chris Middleton can give you another security blanket with the second unit, where it's like, okay, you don't have to create everything. You can still give it to me in the mid post, and I can just shoot over somebody for a couple of possessions. So the young guys don't have to do everything. So, like, fascinated by the 3 years of it all, but also him just being back is Washington doubling down on, let's get some vets in the room that can help insulate our young guys a little bit.
You know what Washington Wizards lineup we need? You know what Washington Wizards lineup we need? What am I going to say? It's unfair? No, it's unfair. What am I going to do? I don't know.
If you disagree, that's more than brother.
So I think the Washington Wizards lineup that we all need, and I mean we
all need to see
all
it.
Need okay. Trae Young, mm-hmm. A.J. Devonta, Chris Middleton, mm-hmm. Anthony Davis, mm-hmm. DeAndre Ayton.
That is not where I thought you were about to go.
Oh, the mid-range going. Yeah.
Oh, dear, that line was going to have like a 65 mid-range rate. I don't think we need that, actually. I would wager we don't need that. Actually, I would hope. Which, you know what happens? We put that line together, and because it's Trae Young and Anthony Davis on the floor together, it's still just going to be Ayton in the dunker spot, and we spreading this out, and we still going to generate some drive and kick threes. We override the mid-range tendencies of everyone else. Y'all space is going to be A-OK. Because, but I can't – I don't know if we could do DeRozan ball. A couple quick things I wanted to add while we're here, Steve. It's funny that on the last episode we were talking about DeMar DeRozan and potential landing spots, and you mentioned Detroit. And I was like, how would Caris LeVert feel about that? And the reason I brought that up was because Caris LeVert was originally brought in, like, hey, can you be second unit scorer slash initiator for us? And then it kind of transitioned to, actually, can you just guard and then shoot sometimes? And so, like, he has shown a willingness to kind of alter his role and kind of fit in. And like, it'd be kind of crazy you bring in DeMar. It's like, yeah, so DeMar, can you do the scoring stuff? It's like, wait, I was brought here first. Like, I can just do that again. That's kind of crazy. And then we fast forward a couple of days, and Caris LeVert, you are a Milwaukee Buck. And it's like, well, darn. So now you're just not going to be asked to do that. That is fascinating to me. And tied to all of this, and maybe it's just me, I am kind of curious to see what happens with D'Angelo Russell. Like, is he actually going to get, like, some reclamation reps in Memphis? Is this just going to turn into a buyout and then another team's going to take a flyer on him? I don't think he's like out of the NBA done. Like, I just do not believe that. I think he is away from like the all-star stuff from a few years ago. But I still think he could be a solid guard. Like, it is just kind of odd. And so I'm just a little bit of interest in what happens with D'Angelo Russell, if he actually contributes to the Memphis context or if he's going to end up elsewhere.
You're very excited about the Grizzlies. I know you sprinkled in the buyout portion. You ready for D'Lo to come in and anchor that second unit, bud?
That would be fascinating. If he can do it, like, I think he has the profile to be able to do so. Let's get to these pull-ups. Let's get to the playmaking. Like, there is absolutely a pathway to where, like, he's just solid on the second unit. I spilled a bunch of ink on how good Ty Jerome was last year. And then the year before that, like, he was obviously in six-man-of-the-year conversations. I don't think it's out of the question. Like, I think Ty Jerome is better than D'Lo. But, like, I don't think it's out of the question that D'Lo could just be a productive second unit guard for them. Which is where, again, I am just kind of fascinated to see how it plays out. We got a lot of time before training camp and things.
Okay. Go ahead. We got any bigs that went anywhere? Well, one box. I'm going to do some research.
Boy, did we. We had a lot of bigs, Steve. So, Kevon Looney, you are a Los Angeles Laker. One-year deal at the minimum. Mo Bamba, you are back in Utah, and this is tied to them bringing back Yusuf Nurkic, two-year, $22 million deal. They signed Jackson Hayes, two-year, $12 million deal. Larry Nance Jr. is in Indiana now. Charles Bassey, you are back to the Golden State Warriors. Talk about big man depth there, and this is off of the Warriors not matching the contract for Quentin Post, so he is officially going to be a Memphis Grizzlies. So those were the bigs, at least at last check on the transaction log. Do any of those pop for you, Steve?
Good for them.
Hashtag good for them.
I think Kevon Looney is going to be a decent fit for the Lakers. I think he's going to do a good job of getting in the half court and setting some screens and anchoring their defense. And so if they play a slower pace, I think it'll be really good for him to get in action and screen and kind of put them in position there. Larry Nance, I think Indiana's a really intriguing fit, to be honest. I feel like I have said this about Larry Nance in the last three places that he's been in, and it hasn't necessarily gone bad. But I think within Indiana, him being able to play potentially four or five in theory, but him being a backup five, like if it's Obi Toppin and Larry Nance, like he can just do things and he can space the floor and he's smart. So that team that seems to work in Indiana. Mo Bamba in Utah didn't expect it, but intrigued. Obviously, they like what they saw. So I wonder what that means. I'm curious. Jackson Hayes in Utah, also curious. Like, what's the breakout going to be for Utah with their bigs? Like, they just said, all right, we don't have Walker Kessler. We will divide this in four equal portions somehow.
Let's recreate Walker Kessler.
Like, you got Yusuf Nurkic, you got Jackson Hayes, you got Mo Bamba, and it's just going to be, hey, Jaren Jackson Jr., can you play the five a little bit, man? Like, I know we're going to do, like, mix this up. You can also play the five, right? Okay, cool. We're good. But I mean, like Utah's building an interesting roster, and it's like we kind of know what the blueprint is. We know the versatility they have, and it feels like they have the blend of talent and youth. that were, like, you remember the Utah teams that were just really good out the gate, and then they were like, hey,
the calendar flips. Excuse me. Excuse me, it's January 19th. I shouldn't pull up the NBA app and immediately see your logo. I need to be able to scroll when I'm looking for your logo. So if you do not mind, thank you.
Hey, you know, you know the trade ruled out. you know the trade deadline's coming, right? Yeah, right. Just want to let you know. Good job. Good job. Well done. Shout out to Will Hardy. Yeah, did any of these moves stand out to you, guys?
I think for me, it was less the Bamba signing in particular, though, hey, if you can block shots, if you can knock down threes with any sort of volume, that is interesting to me. And it was more what you already brought up. So shout out to the Dunker Spot wavelength here. It's like, how do we feel about the actual center room? And the fact that the Jazz have brought back slash added so many options at actual center, and this is before getting into, you know, they've sprinkled in some Kyle Filipowski at the five so far. It's like, how do they feel about Jaren Jackson Jr. at the five? Like, do they feel like that's a button that they can press for like 18 minutes in a playoff game? And obviously they have to get there first. But like, them adding this amount of options at the five, it's at least a light signal to me that like, okay, maybe we don't want this to be a big piece of our diet. We want it to be a counter. We want it to be a changeup. But we don't want to rely on, like, our depth lineup is Jaren at five and then fill out the lineup. So, like, maybe they aren't completely there. Maybe they get there. And obviously, this is July 10th. I could just be wrong about that. There's also that. But at least those were some of my initial thoughts about it. It's like, huh, y'all are adding, we got a rim runner. We got some shot blocking. We got a pop big. Yusuf Nurkic is going to hit people. He's going to pass. I would imagine that he starts. Maybe it's like starting, you know, maybe he's playing 20 minutes a game, but still starting alongside Jaren before they transition to whatever other lineups they want to get to. I'm just kind of fascinated by the five group. So thank you, Steve, for hitting on that first. That's where my...
Oh, thank you, Steve. Thank you. Thank you, Steve. We can end the pod right there. Well done.
Okay, so we're not going to end the pod, but we are going to take a break. When we return, we shift to the W side. All-star reserves were announced. The Aces made some roster moves that we're going to have a conversation about. We're going to bounce. We may bounce around. We'll see how it goes. But stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back with this episode of the Dunker Spot as we shift to the WNBA side, Steve. We got all-star reserve announcements that we're going to get to. But first, certainly the most interesting news of the week, at the very least, the Aces making some roster moves. They waive Kennedy Carter. They signed Justine Fiso from the Indiana Fever, from their development squad, give her a standard contract. They also add Taniya Latson to their development team. First development signing for the Aces this year. Kennedy Carter, though, is the headliner here, waived ahead of the guarantee, the contract guarantee date. And it naturally kind of sent the W in a bit of a whirlwind. It's like, wait a minute. I know the last couple of games have been odd with Kennedy. How did we get here? And at her best, Kennedy Carter literally starts the season with a historic beginning coming off the bench with the amount of points that she scored within her first five games. Added an obvious level of downhill juice, intermediate. Finishes her Aces campaign, converting 62% of her twos and 54% of her threes. The scoring absolutely helped. And yet, we don't get to the All-Star break, and Kennedy Carter is no longer on this roster. And so there's a natural, what the heck happened here? And seeing how quickly it turned was astonishing to me. Because again, there was the bucket getting. And for the people that are watching on YouTube, or for the people that aren't watching on YouTube, rather, in the month of May, Kennedy Carter on the court for 162 minutes for the Las Vegas Aces. They had a plus 14.4 net rating. Across June and July, because of injuries and general absence, only 58 minutes played, a negative 22.4 net rating in those minutes for Kennedy Carter. As the last two games, I think three total shot attempts, six total drives across the last two games of her Aces tenure. It just all got weird. And so just on a very basic level, for me, it is unfortunate that a player as talented as Kennedy is once again without a roster spot. And so, like, absorbing that has been a bit frustrating probably isn't the right word, but it's just kind of sad to me. It's like, from a talent perspective, how many players in the W can score like Kennedy Carter? Like, it is a very short list. And for within the Aces context, being able to have that kind of juice off your bench and or in your closing lineup, it's a bit of a cheat code, considering you have the best player in the world in Asia Wilson, an incredible player in Jackie Young, an incredible player in Chelsea Gray. You just kind of build the boat from there. And so it's wild that we got here. But as this is now multiple spots where Kennedy Carter has not finished the season with their team, there was the natural, like, one of the things I didn't like was this natural, well, we knew it was only a matter of time that this is going to happen. Like, I don't like the air of, like, waiting for this to happen or running victory laps on something like this. Like, this doesn't feel like a joyous time for anyone involved. I don't love that piece of it. And so before I go further, Steve, I wanted to ask, like, what was your initial reaction when the news came down? How surprising was this for you?
Very. And I think the thing is, Kennedy Carter, a lot of people had questions. A lot of statements were made before the season. And Kennedy Carter not only immediately produced, it was consistent. And mm-hmm. So for that to turn into, hey, the Aces have taken a player from the Fever. Well, who are they going to waive? Kennedy Carter? What do you mean? Real quick. And so I think it's interesting, as you stated, the question was, well, how many people can score off the bench like Kennedy Carter? How much does Kennedy Carter also believe that? And I don't necessarily blame anyone. But I think in this day and age, perception becomes so important. And you get put in positions to execute certain things, and if you do not do them, you are seen in a certain type of way. I didn't feel great about it. I didn't want to look at the, once again, we're speculating about what happened with Kennedy Carter. I don't like that. I think there is a nuanced conversation to be had, because there was a shift that happened at some point in the season. I don't know when. I'm not about to analyze body language or this specific moment in this game turned into that, but it became very clear there was some sort of breakdown in communication to a degree, because the messaging we got at the start of the season and the results we got at the start of the season is not what we got as the season progressed. So I don't know what happened. I'm on the outside looking in. But this was a united front of Kennedy Carter seeing an opportunity to once again prove to the world what she can contribute on the basketball court. And this was a Aces situation, tight-knit group, Becky Hammon, I understand, I want to empower you and let you be yourself. That was the messaging we got. I'm not incorrect, right? That was what we... And then they immediately got to doing exactly what they both said. But at some point, it went left. And this is where communication is the most important thing in the world. Because if you do not communicate and you insulate yourself, you put yourself in a position where you are now feeling things that may not exist. And you are now acting on those things that may not exist. And so if you, person who believes in yourself to a high degree, which you need to compete at this level, begin to feel like you're on a leash. Are you really? But now you're acting on that to a degree, right? Meanwhile, on the other side, we need you to play at a high level. We want you to play at a high level. The gap as far as not playing because of injury and illness did no one any favors. I think it didn't help anyone. Because, hey, on one side, when's Kennedy coming back? Not sure. Okay. On the other side, I need to get back. But I'm not at my best. I need to be at my best. This might be my last shot. That creates an unintended schism that you don't think about. Right? Now we're both trying to achieve the same goals. But, okay, we don't have Kennedy Carter. We got to figure this out. Kennedy Carter is working to get back to being Kennedy Carter. Okay, so I can do what I just did for the first start of the season.
Right.
Now I come back, kind of do it. But now a lot of people will point to, okay, well, what's the defense look like? And now we get to where communication becomes important. Mm-hmm. Because I do this. This is my calling card. You know this is my calling card. You do that. This is your calling card. We do also need this. Okay. Mm-hmm. That's fine. That's an equal exchange, right, Nikias? But should then be, what happens when I don't feel like you're allowing me to do my calling card? Mm-hmm. Hey, you're not really doing that thing that we need you to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you don't have communication in that specific scenario, we land at a point where, well, I'm just not going to shoot the ball.
Mm-hmm.
Well, okay. I understand what you're doing over here. Not sure you could do that in this scenario. Hey, mm-hmm. you're not shooting the ball. What are you doing?
Because you're also not doing the other stuff that we need from
you're
you.
You're not doing the other stuff. So now wires are crossed. And now that's when people dig down. That's where things happen. And so I don't like that it happened because it did feel like the scenario for Kennedy Carter to fully embrace an opportunity. And we saw it work. And then it didn't. And I don't like that for either side. Like, I think, and this is 2026, right? We live in a world where people will defend or justify anything for whatever reason they want to. I don't want to blame anyone. I don't want to blame anyone. Because a lot of times when you come to a decision, it's by 50 to 100 cuts.
Mm-hmm.
you may not have thought about how we felt about X, Y, and Z, but that played into a role. And now, okay, we've made the decision that we're not going to do this anymore. You might be justified in your feelings about how you got here. They might be justified in their feelings and how your decisions arrived at a certain point. Like, that's what this feels like to me with no information.
Mm-hmm.
I hope I didn't go too crazy, but that's what I absorbed.
No, like, I think that is fair. And I think that's where, like, I would salute the article from Friend, but also surely it was going to be future friend of the program, Callie Finn, at some point, where her article that she wrote, kind of detailing how the relationship was built early on, where some of the potential breakdowns where it came out. And like, even with that, I talked to 8 sources around the Aces to dig into what happened in the lot. You know what I'm saying? That was just a very much, I'm chronicling, this is how it start. This is what Kennedy has said. This is what Becky has said. Here's a game where such and such happened that may have contributed to this. I was actually at the Wings Aces game that other people are pointing to with some of the defensive breakdowns. As someone that was in the building, yes, the off-ball defense was problematic in that basketball game. Yes, there was a moment after an and one where team huddles up as they normally do after fouls, and it's Kennedy going back and forth. I don't think it was anything like vitriol, that they weren't about to fight each other or anything like dramatic, but there was like a little heated exchange where they're kind of talking through like why the breakdown happened, that kind of thing. And so I can't comfortably say, well, this is 60% of the reason why this happened. All I can say is that happened, and it probably played at least a part in how we got here. And as I like was reacting to and processing the news, I ended up just kind of giving some basketball thoughts because, again, I don't have a bunch of locker room intel to give, and it would be irresponsible for me to like super speculate. So I just kind of kept it to, well, here's some things that probably didn't help. And Steve, I think you laid it out beautifully to where it could just be a breakdown of communication that led to the Aces feeling a certain way about the Kennedy experience, Kennedy feeling a certain way about the Aces experience, and then it just gets to a place to where it's untenable for both, and it didn't have to get there. But I think to that end, the scoring was the calling card. If the scoring dips, or if the process behind that doesn't completely fit or doesn't fit in cleanly enough into what the Aces already have, you're going to have to bring it in other areas to kind of offset that inherent friction. And all friction is not bad, but it's just, we have an established thing. We've won 3 titles in 4 years. This is kind of what we want to run. You are a talent, but you are a little bit different than the talent that we have in the room. There's just natural friction. That doesn't have to be bad or negative. That is just something that you have to work through with reps, et cetera. And so with sliding Kennedy in, like even as she was scoring as efficiently as she was to start the year, there were possessions in which she scored on where it is like 0 or 1 pass possessions where Kennedy gets busy. And it's just like, for me watching and someone that's watched the scene closely for multiple years, it's like, this doesn't feel like Aces basketball, but boy, is it cool that they have Kennedy as a bonus to what they do. And so I just kind of wonder how much of that factored into like Becky's feeling about the experience in it itself, where it's like, I'm already kind of having to shift a little bit of what we do to slot you into this, independent of like Kendi's prior history or whatever. Just from a pure basketball perspective, we do have to shift some of this. And I do have to kind of concede control of some of the ball movement and that I want to establish for you to do what you do. And so I would imagine, again, my thoughts, do not know, confirmed, et cetera. But I would imagine if I am already a coach that has won multiple championships, I am taking a risk, I am bending the system a little bit to let you be you. If you are not doing the other things that I want you to do, if you're not active off the ball offensively, if you're not active and attentive off the ball defensively, if the defense is what it is, and then if the scoring efficiency goes from historic to good, it's like, hey, I'm already making some concessions here. I kind of need you to hold up your end of the bargain. And as you already laid out, Steve, it's easy to see how Kenny may be like, why am I not getting the same leeway? Why am I not closing these games? Why am I watching insert Aces player here go 0-for-3 but get crucial fourth quarter minutes while I have 14 points and I'm sitting next to you? It's easy to see how you get there. And that's how wiring across, et cetera. But like, I do think there were some on-court things that I feel like contributed to this. And I think to your point, Steve, if you don't have the communication to navigate that, it kind of snowballs in a way that it probably didn't have to.
I think the on-ball things could have been digested to a degree, right? Mm-hmm. But I think things shifted at a certain point. Like I felt like Becky knew what she had in Kennedy Carter, and okay, when we need to do X, Y, and Z, I'll probably pivot to this, right? But I know what you can do, yeah, and you're helping us, so this is fantastic. Mm-hmm. Whenever that pivot happened, you did stop feeling that to a degree. So I don't necessarily know if it was specifically, hey, you're not doing this other stuff, but mm-hmm, if there's a point where I need this, I'm going to this group. Hey, why are you not letting me be? Why are you not letting me be me? How do we handle that in between? That's where you got to come together. That's where you have a meeting, right? That's where you, yeah, got to have that communication, where you got to have that trust. And that's the issue sometimes. You don't necessarily have the equity with the person coaching wise, right? And so you're trying, mm-hmm, to win. I got a lot of equity with a lot of people in this locker room. I'm going to do what I have to do to get the best people out there to achieve this mission, right? And it's not, mm-hmm, a slight to you. It's just what we're trying to do. But, yeah, if I'm in a position where this has gone poorly a few times, and now we're in a position where, okay, I feel like this is the same thing again, I'm taking this differently, right?
Mm-hmm.
How do you handle that? And so it's like, I don't necessarily think, and for Kennedy, I do think you had to know in this scenario, you couldn't do that. Like you mentioned the last game, right? The last game Kennedy, mm-hmm, played with the Aces. It can't be, mm-hmm, what that. You can't go pull up that film and see that. It can't be, mm-hmm, active. You can't rage against the machine. You can't rage against this machine. It can't, mm-hmm, be I'm spaced in the corner. I know I'm not getting the ball, so I'm just spaced in the corner. And like some of the defense stuff, if you're a poor defender, it's a poor defender, but can't do exaggerated efforts. Like you can't do that here,
mm-hmm,
with how you have been perceived, fairly or unfairly, to the world. Mm-hmm. It's a tough scenario in the sense that once the world places a perception on you, and it's not fair, but it's the reality of the world we live in. There's a whole bunch of people that have great perceptions as great people, and they're not. They're, yep, selfish. They do what they want to do. Mm-hmm. But they do it because no one's going to come at me. I can do what, mm-hmm, I want. As long as I do X, Y, and Z. That's the world we, mm-hmm, live in these days, right?
Yeah.
But you got to know this is not... You are in a championship building. That being your next opportunity and it not working, how do you think that comes off to everyone else?
Yeah.
Even if you feel justified and correct in, well, I wasn't getting the ball and I wasn't involved in actions. Like, she ran a double drag in that last game. Like, I did in practice because I knew I wasn't going to shoot the ball. Mm-hmm. So okay, where's the next person coming off? Like that Dak doesn't play everywhere. So there is a responsibility to, okay, maybe you want to prove yourself right. But in proving yourself right, you got to do it a certain way sometimes. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, you got to, you prove that you're a really good player once again. Don't feel like the ball's been taken out of my hand and now I can't do what I want to do. Go play. You did it already. No one was thinking about this at any point in time. And then you warp yourself into this universe and now you're operating on that instead of doing what you need to do to be the best you can be. And the problem is you're in a team that is working to win a championship. They don't have time. Yeah. What are they gonna? Mm-hmm. Okay, we want you here. You're helping us. Hey, hey. I land in that spot where it's unfortunate for both, but there's a responsibility for both to make this work.
Yeah. No, I think that is all fair. I just want to quickly hit on, because we've been here for a minute, but as you mentioned, this is a nuanced conversation. I want to make sure that we laid this out as fairly as we could. I just want to say just quickly on the perception piece and going back to a question you asked, like, or you kind of noted there was a shift somewhere. I do think, especially with the benefit of hindsight, I do think the Dallas game was kind of the shift point, if there was one. If there was an actual flashbulb moment, I do kind of think it was the Dallas game with the way that that interaction with the general defense in that game, her not closing out that game, because the Nary Vex one was the Golden State game in which she drives, gets, you know, lands on the hip, et cetera. Then she's just out for a couple weeks. And from there, it's 8 minutes against the Fire, 8 minutes against the Lynx, 16 minutes against the Sky, 11 minutes against the Sky, and then the final game, 15 minutes against the Fever. And so, like, I think that was kind of the one that Wings game was like, hey, it can't be that. And then she got hurt and it just never got back into the flow of things. And then I would just say quickly, as naturally this waving happened earlier this week, we've been kind of waiting to get more firm answers to see what the split is. I think naturally, if a player as talented as Kennedy Carter is not only getting waived, she's getting waived before her training camp contract is guaranteed. Obviously, there is at least some semblance of non-basketball thing. What we don't know and what we shouldn't speculate on, if it's 80% off court, 20% on court. It's 60% on court, it's 40%. We don't have that answer. It's not fair to speculate what it is, but I think it's fair to say there is a split somewhere. And so looking at the ACES schedule, they send out their weekly media availability schedule at the top of, well, I think, every Sunday. So you know when people are going to be available, when you can talk to folks or whatever. They had the game against the Fever on the Sunday. Did not go well. They were off on Monday. They were off on Tuesday. Wednesday was the travel day to Portland, so no media on Wednesday either. And again, by that point, Kennedy had been waived. You got the Justine signing. You got the Tanaya ad. Thursday, they had a shoot around, but that's in Portland, so not sure how many of the Vegas folks were actually there to like ask her something like that, a shoot around. And then we get the pregame press conference. Well, the first question was, one, Asia's listed as questionable. Is she back? Yes, she's back. Is there a minutes restriction? I'm not sure. I got to circle back on that. According to Asia, no, but we'll see. And then the follow-up question is, hey, so can you tell us a little bit about the Kennedy decision and how that's going to impact the operation moving forward? ACES PR steps in and says, we want to keep it about basketball tonight, which in a vacuum sounds like, hey, whoa. So that does mean something off-court happened. It's like, no, knowing who the PR person is, that was just a sentence. I don't think that is a signal of what the split is. I want to add that context there. Could be wrong, but that's my read based on who it was. PR jumped in before Becky said anything. And then Becky says, we aren't going to comment on anyone, on a player that isn't here anymore. And it's just kind of that. And so that in a vacuum also sounds like they're ducking the smoke. They don't want to talk about it. That must mean something blew up off the court or whatever. I don't know if it's that. In my experience of doing a whole lot of pregame things with Becky, she wants to be asked about basketball, just period. But two, she wants to be asked about the game that she's talking about. If you catch Becky after a practice, after a shoot around, there is a wide range of conversations that she is willing to have. And I think most coaches are like that. It's just a more relaxed setting where you can open up a little bit more. when it gets to pregame and postgame, I want to be asked about the opponent that I am facing. Pregame and postgame, I want to talk about the game that just happened, or if you want to look ahead to our next opponent, then sure. And so the pregame setting in and of itself isn't a great one for like transaction questions. And so I think that also factored into the PR reaction and then Becky just kind of leaving it at that. And so going back to the schedule very quickly, the Aces were supposed to have a shoot around this morning as we record on a Friday morning. After the Fire game, they won that game. Asia came back and dropped 32 and 10, by the way. That matters. We get the follow-up email. Hey, practice has been, or shoot around has been canceled for today. And so as we now have the doubleheader on Saturday and Sunday, Saturday is an early local time tip. There's going to be no shoot around. And then Sunday, I don't think there's going to be a shoot around. At the very least, there isn't one scheduled. We'll see if that changes. And so I think in earnest, the earliest that Becky will probably be comfortable talking about this, if she is going to be sometime early next week. That doesn't seem convenient for us as media or for fans that want to get more firm answers on why exactly this happened. But there is context to add. I did want to make sure I sprinkled that part in. And so I don't think this is a grand conspiracy. This is just generally how they operate. Now, you can complain about how they operate. That's within your wheelhouse. But that is generally how it goes. So I just wanted to sprinkle that in before we officially moved off of this subject. But yeah, it's just unfortunate that this is how it landed. So we'll see what's next for the Aces. We'll see what's next for Kennedy Carter. But that's where we wanted to have it. Now, as we transition, Steve, we did get the All-Star reserves announced. And I guess while we're on the Aces, Becky Hammon, you are one of the All-Star coaches. Cheryl Reeve, you are also one of the All-Star coaches. So once again, we get some Becky Hammon, Cheryl Reeve, and a quick hat tip to Cheryl Reeve, who is now the winningest head coach in WNBA history, deserves the salute. So we want to make sure we sprinkle that in as well. But to the reserves, Steve, the guards, Sonya Citron, you are in. Alicia Gray, you are in. Ryan Howard, in the guard group, but you are in. Marina Mabry, you're in. Kelsey Plum, you are in with an asterisk. If she's not healthy, she's naturally going to be replaced by someone. But, you know, to our previous conversation, Steve, give her the acknowledgement at the very least and just get the selection in behind that. So Kelsey Plum is in. We'll see who her replacement ends up being if she needs one. Courtney Williams is in. Jackie Young is in. And in the front court, your reserves, Kiki Arifin, Jonquel Jones, Dominique Malanga, year two All-Star, Steve, Neko Ogumike, and Angel Reese is in. I read those naturally in alphabetical order. So those are your reserves. Any surprises among the group? Are you just fine with who you have? Is there someone that you expected to be there that wasn't? How'd you kind of absorb the reserve announcement?
I forgot that Courtney Williams is an All-Star. So when we did the exercise, as far as who would our reserves be, I didn't have Courtney Williams in. So I'm not surprised that she got in. Dominique, I brought her up on the pod. I was intrigued. I was surprised that she got the full nod, but she's been playing at a high level, so I understand. So it's interesting. I wonder what it would look like if the Mercury had a better record. Alyssa Thomas not being in feels away to a degree. But I get it this specific year. But with everyone else, it pretty much felt like that would be the people that should be in. Did you have any snubs? Did you have any snubs? Because apparently I can't speak today.
you speak just fine, Steve. I think for me, the one snub I would probably go to is Alyssa Thomas, funny enough. Because for me, as you mentioned, like we talked about Dominique Malanga as we were trying to predict, you know, or just talk about who we would have in as reserves. And my thing was, she has played incredibly well. I just think she's missed so much time. Like, I think that's just going to be the thing that holds her out. And so it was less about how good she's been and more how often have we got to see how good you have been. And so her getting that nod over AT, it feels a little rich for me right now because I think, like, in a vacuum, I think AT is still a better player. And I think she's just been on the court more. And so that would probably be like my one surprise. And like when we talk about snubs, it is fair to say who you would take off if you're going to do that. And so for me, like it's either Dom simply because of the games played, or you go AT over NECA because I think she has just been better than NECA this year. And so one of the two is probably where I would go to have AT on. But that's probably the closest I could get to actual snub. Other players I thought about, like the guard group is fine to me, especially since Kelsey Plum's likely going to get a replacement anyway. but no Veronica Burton, no Chelsea Gray. Those are some names that we mentioned on the episode when we talked about reserves. And so them not getting in, it's like, huh, I wonder if one of those two will ultimately end up being the replacement for Kelsey Plum, or if anyone else gets injured, we'll see who slots in there. And also, I guess with Kelsey Plum getting the nod, fair to say, like, Brittany Sykes was playing very well before she went down, but it is a similar games played thing with her since she's been out, but played at a high level at the very least. So unfortunately, she's just going to kind of be out of this conversation, but she's been very good, and I wanted to highlight that portion as well. So that's, yeah, that's probably as close as I can get. Like, AT is probably the biggest one of everyone else, and then you just have different guards that can slide in, and we'll see what happens with the Kelsey Plum portion. We're going to get a draft at some point. Oh, go ahead.
Are we going to get a draft at some point, buddy?
Hey, listen, we can do a draft. I think that'd be a lot of fun. We are going to have like actual GMs on the W All-Star front, so I'm fascinated to see how that's going to work, what types of teams the GMs are going to build, when that is going to happen, smile emoji. But that should be fascinating there. What were you about to say, Steve?
Oh, I was going to ask you, did you have any games of the weekend before we get out of here?
Ooh.
Impromptu.
We like that. I didn't, because I knew we were about to dig deep into the Kennedy conversation and the All-Star conversation. But I will say very quickly, Lynx Liberty is going to be probably the big one for me.
Really?
And naturally, I'm literally going to be at Aces Mercury and Aces Fever. And so it's kind of cheating to list one of those two since I'm literally going to be there. So I would say Lynx Liberty probably like the lead pass choice. I will say Aces Fever, that is just always big national spotlight on that game. We will see who all going to be there because we do have the back-to-back for the Aces. So does Asia play against the Mercury, miss the Fever game? Does she miss the Mercury game, play the Fever game? Does she play both? I did ask Becky Hammond as part of that pregame presser before the Fire game, how are you going to manage playing tonight on the road plus the back-to-back? And she largely said it's just going to be a lot of conversation with Asia and asking her how she's feeling and also looking and seeing how she's looking out there. So that is fascinating. But, hey, the Fever just keep doing the thing with Kelsey Mitchell and Aaliyah Boston. That's kind of fascinating. But either way, like Aces Fever of the two I'm going to be is probably like the bigger one that I'm here for. But that's where I go.
That brother dropped that at the end of the pod. No, I don't have anything. I don't have a single thing.
No games.
Hit the horns. Get us out of here.
You want to ask Storm Mystics?
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Dunkers. But subscribe to the Yahoo Sports NBA YouTube channel. You can watch us. You can catch the audio version wherever podcasts are at. We really appreciate you. You can follow him on socials at Nikias NBA. You can follow me at Steve Jones 20. With that, we hope you have a wonderful day and a delightful weekend. Adios.